Greetings, and welcome to the Atlas Financial Holdings 2015 fourth quarter earnings results. At this time, all participants are in a listen-only mode, and a brief question-and-answer session will follow the formal presentation. If anyone should require operator assistance during the conference, please press star zero on your telephone keypad. As a reminder, this conference is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to your host, Scott Wylie, President and CEO of Atlas Financial. Thank you, Mr. Wylie. You may now begin.
Thank you very much, Rob, and good morning, everyone. With me today is Paul Romano, our Vice President and CFO. We are very pleased to report record 2015 annual operating results and a strong fourth quarter, driven by continued premium growth across our nationwide distribution platform, favorable core business underwriting performance, highlighted by improved combined ratio, and continued above-industry average return on equity and book value appreciation. Today, we'll discuss Atlas's results and share our thoughts regarding the niche within commercial auto on which we focus, along with some thoughts on commercial auto generally. Our target market continues to display favorable pricing trends, and we feel we have a high level of visibility with respect to expectations for the coming year. We'll also highlight some operating initiatives that we've executed to ensure that our organization continues to improve as we grow. I'll now turn it over to Paul to provide details about our quarterly materials and review our policy regarding forward-looking statements.
Thank you, Scott, and good morning, everyone. Yesterday, after market close, Atlas issued its 2015 fourth quarter financial results. Copies of this press release are available at the investor relations section at the company's website at www.atlas-fin.com. On this call, Atlas may make forward-looking statements regarding the company, its subsidiaries, and businesses. Such statements are based on the current expectations of the management of each entity. The words anticipate, expect, believe, may, should, estimate, project, outlook, forecast, or similar words are used to identify such forward-looking information. The forward-looking events and circumstances discussed on this call may not occur and could differ materially as a result of known and unknown risk factors and uncertainties affecting the companies, including risks regarding the insurance industry, economic factors, and the equity markets generally, and the risk factors discussed in the Risk Factors section of its Form 10-K for the year ended December 31st, 2015, which we filed last night. No forward-looking statement can be guaranteed. Except as required by applicable securities laws, forward-looking statements speak only as of the date on which they are made, and the company and its subsidiaries undertake no obligation to publicly update or revise any forward-looking statement, whether as a result of new information, future events, or otherwise. When discussing our business operations, we may use certain terms of art which are not defined under U.S. GAAP. In the event of any unintentional difference between the presentation materials and our GAAP results, investors should rely on the financial information in our public filings. All amounts discussed on this call are in U.S. dollars unless otherwise indicated. We will be utilizing a slideshow presentation in conjunction with this call. This presentation is available on our website's investor relations section and then under the earnings release info selection. For those of you following along with our presentation, we'll begin on slide four. With that, I'd now like to turn the call back over to Scott.
Thanks, Paul. Throughout 2015, we reiterated the company's expectations in terms of premium growth, expansion within our markets, successful integration of Global Liberty, capital management, and ultimately, our commitment to deliver above-industry average underwriting performance and ROE deliverables. Before we get into our specific results, I thought it would be helpful to highlight some key facts about the industry in general. Current data indicates that commercial auto insurance represents approximately $29.2 billion of the overall $571 billion annual property and casualty insurance industry premiums in the U.S. As in past years, we undertook a proprietary market study working with an outside analytics firm to monitor changes in our niche market within the broader commercial auto segment. Based on this information, we believe that Atlas's niche market grew approximately 12% in terms of vehicle count from the last analysis completed in mid-2014. This additional growth suggests an addressable market of more than $2.25 billion in terms of premium based on current market rates. Data compiled by SNL Financial indicates that the property and casualty industry combined ratio was approximately 96% in the past year, with an average return on equity of 7.9%. We've consistently indicated that based on our hyper-focus and specialized business model, Atlas should be well-positioned to deliver stronger margins with a goal of always exceeding the industry ROE by 500 to 1,000 basis points. We were pleased to have achieved each of our operating goals during the period while also reinvesting in our business in terms of people and technology to ensure strong and stable growth given the favorable market dynamics in which we are operating. Our after-tax return on common equity for the full year was 12.3%, and for the fourth quarter on an annualized basis was 14.1%. We expect to continue improving this return in 2016 based on margin expansion and operating leverage. Key elements of our financial results for the year, as highlighted on slide 4, include increased underwriting profit, lower combined ratio, and managed growth in gross premiums written towards the high end of our stated range of 30 to 50% year-over-year in 2015. We're proud of our results for the year and can confirm that all key metrics are in line with both our expectations and the estimates Atlas provided for the year. At the end of this call, I'll provide more guidance regarding our expectations for 2016. Our margin improvement during the year was the result of managed expense ratios in line with our expected 24.5% to 26.5% range, coupled with an improving loss ratio for the full year. At this time, we're seeing a very favorable pricing environment, which we expect to support incremental positive pricing activity. We will take full advantage of this opportunity to grow while continuing to expand margins on a year-over-year basis. Our 2015 full-year combined ratio of 87% is the lowest since the formation of Atlas. From the time Atlas was created, we viewed capital management as a critical core competency. Our commitment to always be a good steward of capital has positioned us well with a clean balance sheet and the necessary financial tools to support our specialized infrastructure to sustain the expected current organic growth trajectory on a self-funded basis. The decisions we've made in connection with allocation of our investment portfolio in recent years protected capital during the tumultuous market activity the past few months. Ultimately, our goals are to properly take advantage of each point in the market cycle. When markets are favorable from a competitive and pricing perspective, we'll grow premiums at a healthy underwriting margins. When markets eventually become more price competitive, our focus will be to maintain margins even if it means that premiums shrink. This should then lead to opportunities to redeploy capital into strategic M&A at exceptional valuations, as we did early in Atlas's existence when the market was soft. At this point, the market is favorable in our core taxi, limo, livery, and paratransit niche, and we expect this to continue for at least another year or two. Based on the close-to-consumer approach we take to product distribution, which includes active participation in industry events and regular dialogue with agents nationwide, we believe we have visibility of approximately 12 to 18 months into pricing changes within this niche and are currently not seeing any signs of disruptive new entrants. As long as the broader commercial auto insurance segment continues to face challenges, we think generalists will stick to their knitting. As shown on slide 5, in the quarter, our core commercial auto premiums grew by slightly more than 100%. For the full year, growth in our core lines was 73.8%, including the addition of Global Liberty Insurance Company of New York. Atlas has maintained steady operating leverage while still investing in people and technology to ensure that we can support growth. We successfully completed and integrated Global Liberty into the Atlas Group of Companies in 2015, which provided the company with infrastructure that will allow us to grow market share on the East Coast in a profitable way, and we believe will serve as a valuable platform to continue to expand in the largest single geographic market for the industry on which we focus. Virtually all of our operating metrics are at the highest levels seen since Atlas's inception. Pre-tax income from operating activities in the quarter was $6 million, or 48 cents per diluted share, compared to $4 million, or 33 cents per diluted share. We've provided this metric for investors as a measure for the past several quarters as we feel it was helpful in breaking out the tax implications on the company prior to our GAAP results reflecting a full U.S. tax rate this year. As you'll note in our press release and filings, we also detailed after-tax income from operating activities as well to provide greater transparency and comparison to the industry results. Net income after tax for the quarter was $4.3 million, or 34 cents per diluted common share. Tax affecting last year's net income on a pro forma basis and excluding the company's treatment of deferred tax assets, this quarter's 34 cents per share compares to 19 cents per share for the same period in 2014. Book value per diluted common share for Atlas at December 31, 2015 is $10.15. Atlas's increased book value for each of the past 13 quarters. Overall, it was a very successful quarter. That said, it's important to keep in mind the fact that we are managing our business for the long term rather than quarter over quarter. On slide 6, you can see the positive year-over-year trends relative to both our loss and expense ratios. As we've discussed previously, our loss ratio can vary quarter over quarter, but as you can see on a full year basis, it has been consistently moving in a positive direction. Typically, it takes about 18 months for the effect of pricing activity to be seen in our financial results. On slide 7, we've summarized the pricing targets set in recent years and the resulting impact on loss ratio over time. While our full year 2015 loss ratio of 59.2% is consistent with the pricing activities undertaken in 2013 and 14, it would have been even better but for approximately $2.1 million of loss development recorded in the fourth quarter related primarily to runoff legacy programs. Paul will provide more detail in this regard, but in short, claims related to these programs are for the most part extinguished, and we do not expect material incremental development in the future. In slide 8, we've displayed our in-force premium to show organic growth coupled with the additional premium as a result of the Global Liberty acquisition. This in-force growth has come through managed market share increases throughout the 40 states plus Washington, D.C., in which Atlas actively writes business. On slide 9, premium by state is summarized for the year. Some notes that may be of interest include the growing portion of New York as a percentage. This is largely due to Global Liberty's acquisition. The growth throughout the country has been strong, with several regions, such as the West Coast, growing in excess of 100%. However, in virtually all states, Atlas currently has single-digit market share. With a stated goal of achieving proportionate market share, or approximately 20% during the favorable market condition, we still have ample room to leverage our current distribution for growth with desired underwriting results. We have increased market share not by adding a large number of new agents, but by cultivating the proven relationships that we have and leveraging our strong value proposition and brands within the Atlas group of companies. This is the benefit of our hyper-focused business model. We work closely with our industry-specific agents and our policyholders to ensure that we can outperform our competition and the broader commercial auto industry. Our agents understand Atlas's value proposition and how to sell it. Our team can also rely on them as partners to provide quality submissions to be underwritten. We also believe that these relationships, coupled with our national scale, will allow Atlas to foresee market dynamic changes well in advance of multi-line writers. We're also leveraging our national footprint to assist agents in understanding potential areas of industry expansion within light commercial auto. One aspect of this initiative includes expanding brand awareness among the increasing number of owner-operators who are being dispatched via mobile apps and ensuring that our agents and customers are properly informed of both the opportunity and the impact on their business. We monitor a number of key metrics across our business. On the front end of the production spectrum, we evaluate hit ratio and application submissions both to gauge the efficacy of our distribution channel as well as the strength of our brand and market conditions. As seen on slides 10 and 11, our pricing and product management have delivered consistent results in connection with these metrics throughout the past 3 years. In late Q3, we began rolling out a new point-of-sale system. In the short run, this implementation impacted the data seen on slide 10 for Q4. However, overall business remains strong, as evidenced by the new business submissions shown on page 11, and we continue to manage to a better than 60% target in terms of hit ratio. The rollout of this system is an example of the kind of strategic investment we've been making in our business with a view towards evolving needs and future success. Development of this interface began almost 2 years ago, incorporating feedback from our business partners, and we're now at a point where our agents and ultimately our expense ratio will start to benefit from its deployment. As noted, new business submissions improved considerably year over year, and while we do not ultimately write every new submission, it is evidence that we're seeing a larger number and a wider range of opportunities to which we can apply our underwriting criteria. In addition, retention rates remain consistent, and this is a strong indicator that our niche market will continue to be healthy in 2016. Moving to slide 12, we know that managing volume, operating margin, and financial leverage should result in the maximizing of return on common equity and long-term value creation for shareholders. At December 31, 2015, our operating leverage, as measured by net written premium to surplus, remained approximately 1.5 to 1, similar to the previous quarter. This ratio has been relatively flat as our retained statutory earnings grew by approximately the same percentage as net premium growth. Managing this ratio is important from a regulatory and rating agency perspective. At the same time, our gross premium written to GAAP equity continues to improve quarter over quarter, moving up from 1.03 to 1 to 1.47 to 1 during 2015. I'll reiterate that we regard being a good steward of capital as a critical element of our business and are committed to ensure that this capability is always treated as a core competency. As communicated previously, our upward bounds for the company's operating ratio is 2 to 1, and we do expect our leverage to move up in this range during the upcoming year. With the objective of self-funding organic growth in mind, we will ensure that our operating leverage is properly maintained. We plan to utilize the reinsurance and debt facilities put in place in 2014 and 15 to improve our GAAP operating ratio while maintaining healthy statutory ratios. With that, I will once again turn the call over to Paul for a more detailed review of our financial results, and then I'll return for a discussion of the market and outlook for 2016.
Thanks, Scott. Our financial overview in the slide deck begins on slide 14. As always, we encourage each of you to reach out to Scott or myself with any questions. Gross premium written increased 98.9% to $52.4 million compared to $26.4 million for the three-month period ended December 31, 2014. This growth included $12.9 million of gross written premium related to Global Liberty acquisition. Without the additional premium from Global Liberty, year-over-year organic growth for the quarter would have been 49.8%. The primary driver of this growth was the continued market expansion that Scott has highlighted and the continued pricing improvement across the company's core lines. At December 31, 2015, in-force premium was $210.6 million, and the company's gross unearned premium reserve was $108.2 million. We did not make any changes to our quota share reinsurance rates during Q4. We continue to cede 15% of our premiums under our quota share contract for American Country, American Service, and Gateway. Also, during the fourth quarter of 2015, under a separate contract, we ceded 20% of Global Liberty's subject written premium. All reinsurance programs are under review with the objectives of leveraging our increased scale to obtain the best possible terms for 2016. Managing our operating leverage by proactively utilizing quota share reinsurance is a key element of our self-funding strategy. Through this strategy, we have continued benefiting from organic growth within our niche markets during a favorable market environment. Net premium earned increased 53.6% in the three-month period ended December 31, 2015, to $41.9 million. Atlas's loss ratio improved to 60.9% in the 3 months ended December 31, 2015, from 61.7% in the three-month period ended December 31, 2014. The loss ratio improvement in 2015 as compared to 2014 is primarily related to pricing activity on our core lines. We continue to see opportunities to be a price leader in our space. As Scott mentioned, the fourth quarter loss ratio included $2.1 million in development related to primarily legacy programs, which represents 4.7% of our loss ratio in the period. Excluding this development, the loss ratio related to our core business was 56.2%. On a full year basis, excluding development on these non-core lines, the loss ratio would have been 58.5%. At December 31, 2015, open loss reserves related to these legacy lines was less than 1% of the case reserves, and we do not expect material future development. As a result, we believe that the full-year results are a better measure of our operating trends as opposed to quarter-over-quarter changes. Underwriting expense is comprised of a combination of acquisition costs, which are agent commissions and premium tax expenses, net of ceding commissions received under our quota share reinsurance contract, plus other underwriting expenses. Excluding the impact from share-based compensation expenses, the underwriting expense ratio was 26.3% in the three-month period ended December 31, 2015, compared to 25.9% in the prior year quarter. Excluding amortization of intangibles related to Global Liberty acquisition, underwriting expenses were 25.5% in the quarter. We continue to see our underwriting expense ratio falling within our target range of 24.5 to 26.5% of net premium earned. Overall, Atlas's combined ratio for the three-month period ended December 31, 2015 was 88.2%, compared to 88.4% for the three-month period ended December 31, 2014. Underwriting profit, which is the income produced prior to investment income, increased to $5 million from $3.2 million in the prior year period, representing a 56.6% increase. Atlas generated net investment income of $1.1 million and $884,000 for the quarters ended December 31, 2015 and 2014, as well as $183,000 and $228,000 of realized gains, respectively. This resulted in an overall investment yield of 2.2% for the quarter ended December 31, 2015. Atlas reported net income after tax of $4.3 million during the three-month period ended December 31, 2015, compared to net income after tax of $9.5 million during the three-month period ended December 31, 2014. The fourth quarter of 2014 results were favorably impacted by the adjustment to reverse the valuation allowance against our deferred tax assets in the amount of $7.1 million. Atlas generated 34 cents per common share diluted for the three-month period ended December 31, 2015. This compares to 77 cents per common share diluted as reported for the three-month period ended December 31, 2014. Which does include 58 cents benefit related to the reversal of the valuation allowance against our deferred tax assets. Excluding this impact, earnings per common share diluted would have been 19 cents for the three-month period ended December 31, 2014. For the fourth quarter 2015, the annualized return on average common equity was 14.1%. On slide 15, we provide more detail regarding our income from operating activities. The analysis should be helpful in understanding the business side outside of a few of the atypical items we've noted in past quarters and in light of our tax treatment. This internal non-GAAP performance measure is used in the management of the company's operations. It represents operational results excluding, as applicable, net realized gains or losses, net impairment charges recognized in earnings, net tax adjustments, and other items. After-tax income from operating activities, which is an indicator of our overall incremental profitability growth of our organization, was $3.9 million, or 31 cents per common share diluted in the fourth quarter 2015, as compared to $2.7 million, or 22 cents per common share diluted in the same quarter last year, representing a 46.9% increase. On slide 16, we detail the components of book value. We increased book value to $10.15 at December 31, 2015, from $9.08 at December 31, 2014. Toward the bottom of this slide, we step through the key elements that impacted book value year to date. Over the next two slides, we outline Atlas's balance sheet position. Atlas's cash and invested assets at December 31, 2015 increased to $233.4 million compared to $180 million at December 31, 2014. The increase is primarily attributable to the increased premium written, the addition of Global Liberty, and the draw on our line of credit facility. Unearned premium balances, which represent premiums corresponding to the time periods remaining on the underlying in-force policies, were $108.2 million at December 31, 2015, as compared to $59 million at December 31, 2014. This increase is the result of continued organic growth plus the addition of Global Liberty. As noted earlier, during the first quarter of 2015, we established a credit facility with Fifth Third Bank, which allows us to draw up to $30 million at LIBOR plus 450 basis points for the use in connection with our statutory entities, plus another $5 million at LIBOR plus 275 basis points for other general corporate purposes. We have drawn $15.5 million from the $30 million facility and infused these funds into the ASI pool companies, which include American Country, American Service, and Gateway, in the form of surplus notes. We also have drawn $2 million of the $5 million facility to support the needs of the premium finance company we acquired in the Global Liberty transaction. As an investment philosophy, we continue to place priority on preservation of capital to support future premium growth. Our investment duration of 4.1 years remains consistent with the expected liquidity needs and payout patterns, and the majority of our holdings are in fixed income securities rated AA or better by S&P. The high quality of our investment portfolio is detailed on slide 18. Because we intend to hold securities to maturity, while any increases in interest rates could create an unrealized loss in the short term, we would not expect such losses to be realized. Working with our outside investment advisor, we monitor these positions in our portfolio closely, especially in light of recent world events. With that, let me turn the call back to Scott for his concluding remarks.
Thanks, Paul. I'll now highlight some of the market trends we're seeing and provide additional color on our niche within commercial auto. When Atlas was launched 5 years ago, the broader commercial auto insurance segment had outperformed the P&C industry at large for more than a decade. And more specifically, in our niche, light commercial auto outperformed commercial auto in general over the same time period. Our firm belief, then and now, is that a well-run, hyper-focused operation can successfully manage high-frequency, lower-severity business to provide returns in excess of the industry. As seen on slide 20, over the past few periods, as a whole, commercial auto has atypically reported worse loss results than P&C at large. Additionally, recent increases in claim severity have sparked a shift towards loss reserve deficiencies. The fact that the broader commercial auto segment has in the past few quarters been putting up results that are worse than seen historically should allow our model to further differentiate Atlas from the generalists who write the majority of less specialized commercial auto business in the country. We expect this to be the case for two reasons. First, the longer it takes for generalists to address the challenges they're currently facing, the less likely it is that they will allow intermediaries like managing general agents or wholesalers to attempt to re-enter our niche. And second, to the extent that broader commercial auto rates continue to increase, overall pricing buoyancy from smaller local competitors should be seen in our niche as well. Looking at Atlas and our niche specifically, we've benefited in terms of pricing accuracy and claims discipline. Our laser focus and expertise, coupled with the expected high-frequency nature of our niche, are key reasons why we've been able to avoid the problems recently challenging other large generalists. Ours is a high-touch business, and Atlas's subsidiaries have considerable proprietary data points that go back decades. The predictive analytics tools that we've implemented, both in the area of underwriting and claims, will provide further precision and potentially incremental margin going forward to build on the strengths we already possess. In addition, we have lower retained limits on our policies than many other segments within commercial auto, which we have further managed through the use of reinsurance. As a result, our exposure to large losses is considerably lower than the commercial auto industry at large. The reason for the market discussion is to express that Atlas truly is operating in a very specific sector within a larger segment. As a result of our specialization, we feel that we can benefit from clear pricing visibility, consistent, albeit high, claims frequency, and lesser risk of unexpected severity claims. Our trade-off is size in favor of more predictable and potentially better margins, supporting higher than average return on equity. Despite the somewhat negative attention that broader commercial auto has attracted in the past year, it's the second fastest growing subsegment of P&C, up 9% year over year based on a recent B of A note that places the size of the market at $29.2 billion. It's also highly fragmented, with the largest writer under 8% of total share and about 14 companies that make up just over 50% of the market. Like commercial auto, is a much smaller subset of that, but is growing as well. We've noted in the past a market size of approximately $2 billion, and based on the updated market research study we conducted, believe that the segment is now larger based on the aforementioned 12% increase in vehicle count over the past 2 years. In general, we attribute this market expansion to generational preferences coupled with technology advances making it easier for our customers to attract rides. We're also seeing a continuing movement of drivers into the owner-operator model, which is our target demographic, as evidenced by the fact that our average policy has approximately 2 vehicles on it. Please note that individuals driving personal automobiles under dispatch via transportation network companies are not included in our estimates of industry size and growth. Even with this market expansion in mind, it's important to appreciate that Atlas doesn't aspire to be big in the context of public insurance companies or to grow solely to move the top line. We continue to believe that proportional market share for Atlas as a market leader will be approximately 20% of our specialized niche. At this stage in our business, the best and highest use of our resources and capital is to organically pursue incremental share in our existing space. That said, we are cognizant that expansion in the future across market cycles should also involve strategic M&A that will support horizontal expansion into other specialty commercial auto insurance subsegments with favorable attributes. Recent industry notes have highlighted the fact that specialty insurance is outperforming the industry overall. As we grow, we will always focus on specialty rather than broader markets. We have a track record of successful acquisitions that were incremental in terms of infrastructure, accretive both to income and book value, and with attractive valuations. We're cultivating a pipeline to ensure that Atlas is well positioned to build on this capability down the road. On slides 21 and 22, we provide recent industry pricing trends. As we anticipated in prior quarterly calls, the commercial auto rate environment in general appears to once again be firming. Data from the Council of Insurance Agents and Brokers largely reflect the consistent steady rate increases we're seeing with broader commercial auto. These increases in the fourth quarter were flat to moderate 90% of the time, up from earlier quarters in 2015. While one quarter is not a trend, this quantitative information is supplemented by qualitative public information from industry participants suggesting that incremental rate increases should be expected in most cases. Also, as is typically the case, smaller accounts support higher rates than larger ones in general. Our niche traditionally lags broader commercial auto by 12 to 18 months in terms of pricing. As such, incremental price increases overall should extend the firmness in our niche market. We've been achieving high single-digit rate increases and gaining market share based on our increased marketing activities, strong value proposition, and pricing discipline, coupled with larger carriers exiting our specific market in recent years. We've not seen any signs of any disruptive new market entrants, although there is certainly the possibility, and it will come into play at some point, notwithstanding the many positives I mentioned earlier. In the meantime, we continue to expect moderate incremental rate increases during the upcoming year, and we'll be pricing our products to a loss ratio in the 50s. As has been the case throughout 2015, we will not be providing more granular pricing information for competitive reasons. Let me conclude with some estimates and additional thoughts on 2016. We believe that we can continue to write business below a 60% loss ratio with incremental rate increases in the mid to high single digits while growing in excess of 30%. We believe Atlas can produce high teens ROEs that exceed the industry, provided market conditions remain favorable. Our team is committed to managing our overall expense ratio within the 24.5% to 26.5% target range we previously communicated. As discussed before, we're likely to remain on the high side of this range while the company continues to have significant organic growth opportunities. Now that our new policy management system has been implemented, we are running off legacy systems and will always look for other incremental opportunities to continuously improve and drive down operating efficiency. We are also excited about the potential relative to our increased use of predictive analytics to add another level of sophistication and efficiency to our operations. And, as always, it is important to acknowledge the great, experienced, and dedicated members of the Atlas team. We expect to write between $260 and $290 million in premiums for the full year 2016 and feel very confident that our current capital position will allow us to achieve this growth on a self-funded basis. As always, I want to clarify that this premium figure is an estimated range, not a goal. We will always put a priority on margin and operating leverage over premium growth on an absolute basis. With that, let's turn it over for any questions.
Thank you. At this time, we'll be conducting a question and answer session. If you'd like to ask a question, please press star 1 on your telephone keypad, and a confirmation tone will indicate your line is in the question queue. You may press star 2 if you would like to remove your question from the queue. For participants using speaker equipment, it may be necessary to pick up your handset before pressing the star keys. One moment, please, while we poll for questions. Thank you. Our first question comes from the line of Paul Newsome with Sandler O'Neill. Please go ahead with your questions.
Good morning, and thank you for the call.
Good morning, Paul.
I'd like to start off with maybe a little bit more information about the $2.1 million in reserve developments. Can you talk a little bit about, you know, what was Gateway, what was American, I guess American Services, that's right, the old utility business, and, you know, what happened in, specifically in the quarter that that created the need for an increase in the reserves? Those are, as I understand, those are pretty old reserves at this point, so it's a little bit of a surprise that they're coming back to say hello.
Sure. Happy to provide some clarification on that. So in terms of the overall numbers, approximately $1.2 million of the development related to the legacy Gateway claims and approximately $700,000 related to the old surety program. And the balance of it was assigned risk and some other miscellaneous business. So a key element is that, you know, those programs do represent, as Paul mentioned, a very small percentage of our overall reserves, less than 1%. I think at this point we have only about 35 open claims related to that legacy period for Gateway. So you're right in that those are old, pretty well-developed periods. But, you know, it is a situation where we need to finalize and put those claims to bed. And as we really focused on getting reserves to where we believe they needed to be to have kind of a final ultimate loss ratio, particularly on the Gateway business, as we come to sort of the tail end of the purchase price adjustment on that deal, it made sense to settle out the claims and set the reserves where they were. So that really is the detail around that. A comment that I'll make, you know, as we have in the past, we will, in the first quarter, have an adjustment to the outstanding preferred shares related to the Gateway acquisition that ties to development for pre-acquisition liabilities for that book of business. And obviously, we will report that along with our first quarter results. So at this point, we haven't finalized that calculation. Contractually, it's a first quarter deliverable. But there will be some adjustment to preferred shares that would be affected by the development on the Gateway side because of that purchase price protection component of the purchase agreement that we've talked about in the past. So we do not, you know, as we mentioned on the formal part of the call, expect future incremental development related to those old lines. And as Paul commented too, on a full year basis, the impact, you know, was relatively immaterial. I think 0.7. You know, or 0.07% on the total loss ratio.
Where does that preferred adjustment run through the income statement?
It'll run through the income statement in the under underwriting expenses. There's a favorable adjustment offsetting the preferred shares.
And that'll be an after-tax adjustment.
Great. And then maybe completely switching to the top line guidance. Any more detail about the sources of growth? maybe a breakout in terms of what you think is going to be customer-related growth versus the proportion that's related to the price increases and maybe a geographic, further geographic description of where that growth is going to come from.
Sure. So in terms of the distinction between increased policy count versus pricing, we are expecting to continue to achieve mid to potentially high single digit rate or incremental rate, probably more rate on new business than on renewal. As you know, we have had significant rate increases over the last 3 years, and certainly for well-performing renewal business, those increases might be moderated relative to what we would attract for new business. So I would say mid to single digits there. The remaining approximate 25% to 30% growth would come from incremental policy or vehicle count. All of that would be organic. We did not factor any incremental M&A into those forecasts. In terms of geography, we will be able to grow faster in areas like the West Coast, where we continue to have relatively lower market share. It's obviously easier to grow from a 3 or 4% market share position to a, 6 or 7% market share than it is, for example, to grow from, 10 or 12% to the high teens. So while we are focusing on growing organically to write quality business in all of the 40 states plus Washington, D.C., where we distribute, I think our rate of growth will be seen higher in those regions that have a lower overall market share percentage at this point. But we do feel like we have efficient distribution. We've got about 260 to 270 independent agents. As I commented, we really regard these agents as partners. And based on the volume of applications that we're seeing from those agents, we believe that we can achieve those objectives with our current distribution channel. It won't require our adding a significant amount of new agents. And that's an important point because obviously the agents we have, we really believe to be experts in the space. They're well connected. And we are continuing to see opportunities to write business that they have controlled for many years, but perhaps, had placed with a competitor earlier on, either because of some of the challenges that our subsidiaries faced prior to Atlas acquiring them, or simply because the market had been softer, if you go back, 2, 3, 4, 5 years.
Thank you very much.
Great. Thanks for the questions, Paul.
Our next question is coming from the line of Dan Farrell of Piper Jaffray. Please proceed with your questions.
Hi, and good morning. Scott, I was wondering if you could expand a little bit on the predictive analytics initiative that you started to put in place and how you think over time benefits the overall operations and results.
Sure, I'd be happy to. So we have been utilizing predictive analytics in the underwriting area really ever since the inception of Atlas. We continue to evolve that. As we had press released about a year and a half ago, we partnered with a group called Eagle Eye Analytics to use a machine learning tool to sort of further expand on that predictive analytics in the area of underwriting. Having been impressed with that approach, we decided to develop some predictive analytics models around our claims process as well. That is now completed, and we're deploying it here in the first quarter. The claims model essentially includes 4 submodels, one to predict expected severity early on in the claim's life, the second to predict likelihood of attorney defense or representation, another to predict the likelihood of a claim that should be fast-tracked, and then finally, average claim life. So the way we're going to apply the model in a nutshell is first to make sure that claims are as quickly as possible routed to the appropriate person within the claims unit, both in terms of experience and expertise. The second is to make sure that from a claims inventory perspective, we always have the right number of people at the right levels within the claims enterprise. And then finally, as we scale up and then, in the longer term, potentially have to scale back as the market shifts, it will help us to really balance workload and staffing and expense levels. So, really the goal initially is to make sure that We are always getting the claim in the right place at the right time as quickly as possible. The benefit of that is both operational efficiency, which should help reduce our unallocated loss adjustment expense. But probably the biggest benefit is on the indemnity side where, you know, although we believe that we have best-in-class sort of traditional claims capabilities based on all of the experience that we have within our organization, the fact is that this additional layer of sophistication will help us to further leverage that expertise. And so we are expecting that it could result in incremental improvement in terms of indemnity payment as well. So the ultimate benefit of both of those things together will be borne out probably over the period of 2016 and 2017 as new claims are routed through the organization using the benefit of the model. But based on some sort of general statistics that we've gotten, you know, our expectation is that that could benefit the loss ratio by anywhere from 2 to as many as 5 percentage points over time. So we are not going to reflect that expected benefit in our near-term results, but it is obviously our desire that we will achieve those. And to the extent that we do over time, it will help both in terms of improving loss result in the near term and simply making us even more competitive in the longer term. So, you know, we're very excited about it. I recently saw a statistic that indicated that only about 17% of all property casualty companies are currently deploying predictive analytics in the claim area, but almost 60% of firms that have not done so have a desire to. So I do feel like this is an area where, you know, as in a lot of cases, we've tried to be on the front edge of utilizing or applying sophisticated tools to layer on top of the strong heritage that our companies have had and really leverage the extensive amount of fine detail and data that we have in the organization.
That was helpful detail. Thank you. And then just your comments on your niche, the industry addressable market that you target seems to continue to be showing strong growth, maybe a little slower than it had been, but still pretty solid. Can you comment on current drivers there and how you maybe think about that as we go forward?
Sure. You know, you'll recall when we revised our outlook based on the analysis we had done mid to late 2014, you know, the two-year period leading up to that point, the vehicle count growth was about 19%. Obviously, in the most recent two-year period, it's more like 12%. You know, and we had commented, you know, that earlier adjustment we thought had been impacted by the introduction of transportation network companies, among other things, and that we did see that would be somewhat of a correction, potentially have a couple more years of benefit, and then ultimately the industry growth rate would probably revert back to what it's historically been, which is typically somewhere between 3% and 5% year over year. So the 12% we saw over the last 2 years is still a faster rate of growth than what has been historically the case, but as you point out, not as significant as it was from 2012 to 2014. So I think as we look forward, you know, we do continue to think that the industry growth rate or the niche growth rate is going to probably revert back to, you know, that 3% to 5% year over year. On sort of a you know, almost a bit of a bell curve. So in terms of the drivers of that growth, you know, I think it you know, we continue to see benefit of incremental ridership where, you know, I think demographic trends, you know, people are moving away from car ownership, increased number of people moving into metropolitan areas. Obviously, access via mobile apps and online hailing tools are increasing people's reliance on the kind of people we insure across the board. And you're seeing that not only in the context of TNC companies, but also traditional taxi, limo, and livery operators with an increasing number of mobile apps and web-based hailing applications that are designed, you know, for all aspects of the industry. So we do think that trend will continue. And, you know, as I pointed out, it's also causing an increased overall percentage of drivers to operate as owner-operators, which falls squarely within our target demographic. So in addition to seeing a bit of market expansion overall, in terms of direct opportunity for Atlas, that shift or continuing shift towards owner-operators is a positive in terms of, you know, more vehicles and drivers falling within, you know, kind of our underwriting sweet spot.
Okay, great. Thank you very much.
Thanks for the questions.
Thanks, Dan.
Our next question is from the line of Ryan Burns with Janney Montgomery Scott. Please go ahead with your question.
Thanks. Good morning, everybody. The loss ratio has improved, you know, a couple of points in each of the last couple of years. Again, it's a very attractive loss ratio right now. Is it at a point now where you're willing to sacrifice some rate to get more volume at these current levels, or I guess can you continue to grow at these levels and continue to show a couple of points of loss ratio improvement?
We do feel that we can continue to improve the loss ratio, both due to pricing activity as well as the expected benefit of some of the initiatives we talked about, particularly in the area of predictive analytics. In terms of the trade-off, you know, the two things that deliver return on equity in the insurance business from an underwriting perspective really is margin coupled with operating leverage. And so if we can expand margin at a level that will continue to allow us to maximize operating leverage within the range that we're comfortable, you know, balancing those two things together is what will optimize return on equity. So that is ultimately going to be the analysis we go through in all of the different territories where we write. And different geographies are going to be different. There are some local markets where we will have the opportunity to both grow and expand margin, and others where, you know, we may temper one or the other. But across our overall business, the goal is going to be to maximize that return on equity, which is going to be the combination of those two things together. But we do feel like the market is very healthy from a competitive standpoint. We continue to strengthen the Atlas brand and the brand of our operating companies across the country and continue to deliver that strong value proposition to policyholders with the expectation that it should allow us to charge a premium price for the products that we underwrite. So I think it's the short answer to your question is it'll be a combination of both, with the ultimate objective of maximizing return on equity.
Okay, great. And then, again, I hate to belabor, I guess, the non-core reserves, but just trying to figure out, you know, what gives you guys confidence that it doesn't sound like there are too many outstanding claims, but just trying to figure out what gives you guys confidence that they won't, you know, have more, I guess, material unfavorable development.
Yeah, I mean, the real key in particular, if you focus on the non-core commercial auto business, I mean, that we are now in the third year, or 2015 was the third year where we were managing the runoff of those claims. The typical life cycle of those type of claims is 3 to 4 years. So from a pure duration standpoint, you know, at the end of that tail, you're really dealing with some of the oldest, you know, potentially most challenged claims. And so, you know, as I touched on, I think we have, you know, approximately 35 of those claims open. You know, it is a very, very small percentage of overall inventory. Those claims throughout the year, but especially in the fourth quarter, were vetted at a very granular level by our senior claim staff to ensure that they were comfortable with where reserves were held. A number of those claims were also settled out in 2015, which, again, you'd expect given the typical, you know, duration of the claim payout pattern for that type of business. And finally, you know, a number of those claims, because they are, you know, older, larger claims, some may be in litigation, you know, they are reserved at the policy limit in many cases. And so they simply can't develop further. So we do feel very comfortable with that, I think both because we're at the tail end of the runoff period, coupled with the fact that we know that our senior claim staff, you know, looked very specifically at each of those claims individually to make sure that they were comfortable. And finally, because we are ultimately, you know, getting them resolved, which, you know, is part of why we recognize the development in the fourth quarter, but it's also why we feel comfortable that we shouldn't see it going forward. You know, I guess the final piece is to the extent that there is any development, favorable or unfavorable, you know, we still have the protection related to the original purchase price agreement as well. So, you know, while that didn't come into play in the fourth quarter, it will ultimately offset development, whether it's a positive or a negative. So hopefully that helps to explain our comfort level.
Sure, that does. And again, just quickly, just from a numbers question, I just want to make sure I understand the mechanism with the preferred. So essentially that will be an offset to expenses in the first quarter, and I guess on a, just a tax-affected basis of $1.2 million. Is that the right way to think about it?
So the ultimate adjust, so the adjustment itself is going to be a tax-affected off of the development. It would be if, you know, for example, if you tax-affected the $1.2 million, we would claw back preferred shares in the amount of that tax-affected number, mm-hmm. Which, as Paul mentioned, will have a roll through the income statement, but it also then reduces the number of outstanding preferreds, which would then, going forward, reduce the amount of accrued interest that picks forward, and it also is going to have a very small positive effect on outstanding diluted common share count as well.
Right.
But again, we will do the actual calculation in the first quarter, and articulate on our first quarter call, you know, what that adjustment is, the same way that we did last year, in the prior year in connection with that aspect of the deal. It is premature for us, I think, to communicate, you know, the exact detail of the analysis, because candidly, it's something that gets completed in the first quarter after the full year results are done.
Okay, great. Thanks for the color, guys.
Great. Thanks for the questions.
Thank you. The next question is from the line of Brian Hollenden with Sidoti & Company. Please go ahead with your questions.
Good morning, and thanks for taking my call.
Good morning, Brian.
Hi, Brian.
With your strong organic growth, can you talk about how you gain market share? Specifically, how does your value proposition differ from your niche competitors?
So the real key is being able to deliver a level of service that is truly valuable to the end users of our product, as well as to our distribution channel. So in the case of the end users, the policyholders, it has to do with getting their vehicles back on the road quickly when they have physical damage claims. It's being able to appropriately respond and protect them when third-party claims are brought against them, which in a nutshell really means quickly being able to vet valid versus invalid claims, resolving valid claims quickly, and you know, making them a hard target in the context of claims that are not valid or not meritorious. And we're able to do that through a combination of sophisticated resources and experience. And so that's a key area. Also on a day-to-day basis, you know, helping operators who have multiple drivers evaluate drivers, providing risk management guidance. We are working with a number of in-vehicle technology providers to make sure that we can help drivers understand how they could benefit by implementing some of these new technologies on an aftermarket basis. So there's a whole range of things that we do, and it really all emanates out of being close to the consumer and have, you know, the companies we own having a very long heritage in this specialty niche. So it's understanding what's important in their business and making sure that we're able to provide direct value to improve that customer experience. At the agency level, it's doing things like, you know, one, making sure that we can quickly turn quotes around, which we can do because our underwriters specialize in this business. We understand what we're looking at. The agents don't have to re-educate them the way that they might if they're dealing with a generalist, committing to best-in-class turnaround times. And then finally, you know, the deployment of the point-of-sale interface that I mentioned is going to move us forward significantly in terms of giving our agents the capability to interact directly with the company on a real-time basis and get access to lots of information that previously might have had to have been obtained manually. So we are still retaining control over underwriting and claims handling, but this does give our agents the ability to have real-time access in a way that they've indicated would be valuable and important to them. So those are some key areas. And then it really comes down to making sure that value proposition is understood by the market. And so we have, since the inception of Atlas, been very active in terms of, you know, local industry advertising, being very involved in industry groups like the Limo Associations and Taxi Limo Paratransit Associations, both nationwide and regionally, partnering with our agents to go out and visit, you know, their large customers. So there's a lot of different initiatives that we've undertaken, you know, to make sure that not only do we have that strong brand and value proposition, but that it's well known to the marketplace. And in those states where we have relatively lower market share, the incremental benefit of that is going to continue to become more and more significant. So, you know, we do still see a lot of opportunity, a lot of runway ahead, and that's something we're really committed to continuing to cultivate.
Thanks for that color. And then just one follow-up question on modeling. Just noticed your tax rate, I guess, was a little bit lighter than what I would have estimated in the fourth quarter. How should we think, you know, about the tax rate in 2016, if you have a general guidance on that?
So the tax rates in 2016 should be modeled in at 35%. We did have an incremental benefit as a result of going from a 34% tax payer in Q3 and prior to a 35% taxpayer in Q4.
Okay, great. Thank you so much.
Great. Thanks for the question.
The next question comes from the line of Ron Bobman with Capital Returns. Please go ahead with your questions.
Hi, Scott. Good morning.
Good morning, Ron.
Hey, I had a question about, and it doesn't really have a necessarily a correct answer now, but sort of the trying to get some insight as to how long this favorable commercial auto pricing trend continues. And I was curious if you could provide some color about, as it relates to, of course, your specialties and your quote opportunity to sort of quote more business and convert some portion of that to bound business. Could you talk about sort of the trend there, maybe early 16 compared to late, you know, fourth quarter of 15, or at least late fourth quarter of 15 versus the third quarter of 15, as far as the sort of the quantity of flow, whether it's picking up, whether it's continuing at the same rate, whether it's flat, and then also talk about sort of the what I'll call sort of the rate of conversion, and any, you know, what the rate there has been, and is it improving, maintaining itself, or declining? Thanks a lot.
Sure. No, those are great questions. So, you know, I guess to address the first part of the question, you know, our niche tends to lag broader commercial auto by about a year and a half in terms of general rate activity. So when commercial auto generally begins to harden, it typically takes, you know, a year to 2 years for our niche to follow. Similarly, when commercial auto generally begins to soften, it will typically be a year to 2 years before our market follows. And a lot of that dynamic is fundamentally driven by the trend towards and away from managing general agents that generalists will tend to follow at those points in the market cycle. So, you know, as markets become soft, it's typically the case that generalists will allow managing general agents, as you know, to represent them. When markets turn, it is often the case that those programs get terminated. Generalists kind of redeploy their capital within their core spaces. And it's that exodus of general agents and wholesalers that really helped create incremental opportunities for us to capture more business at higher rates, beginning in 2012 and continuing through 2013, 14, and 15. You know, as we had mentioned, you know, on previous calls, the momentum of that exodus of capital is slowing down, where most of those programs were, in fact, probably terminated in 2012-13. It took a year to 2 years for those terminations to result in non-renewals of business, which means that we really saw those non-renewals hit the marketplace probably mid-2014, 2015, and to some extent into 2016. But again, I think, you know, we won't see as much of that non-renewal activity. That said, we are not seeing any signs of disruptive new entrants, so that, you know, we do expect the continued opportunities to exist. If you look at slides 10 and 11 of our deck, you know, we do provide details around our bound to application ratio, which we expect to be at around 60% for 2016. Our application count is up significantly. You know, as we noted in there, some of that is our new point of sale system captures a more granular amount of detail. So the denominator in that equation is a little bit higher. But overall, the number of vehicles is still up significantly, as you can see on the upper left chart on slide 11. So, you know, while one quarter is definitely not a trend, we are definitely seeing a healthy increase in terms of opportunities to quote new business, and we are not seeing a significant amount of competitive pricing pressure. So, you know, I think we look forward and expect that 2016, you know, will be favorable. We're going to manage price increases around the idea that we want to maintain about a 60% bind to quote ratio. We want to maintain a renewal retention rate at about 85%. So those are going to be some of the key metrics that we look at in terms of managing the amount of rate we are able to take versus the amount of business we're able to incrementally write. And again, it really comes back down to balancing margin and operating leverage because as we grow, you know, we are ultimately a user of capital. And since we want to self-fund that growth and maximize the return on the capital that we have and candidly return to common shareholders, that balance is key and critical.
Thanks a lot. Good luck. Keep it
Thank
up.
You.
The next question is from the line of Ali Mokrabi with Singular Research. Please proceed with your questions.
Good morning.
Morning.
You know, you touched on the growing TNCs and they're impacting the overall market now and in the future. Wanted to know specifically, more specifically, you know, seeing the success of your predictive analytics in terms of lower loss ratio, will that be impacted by less taxis out there and possibly more owned and operated and TNC vehicles and drivers, more in the short to medium term?
Yeah, interestingly, when we look at the market expansion, we are continuing to see nationwide that the taxi space in terms of vehicles on the road is actually still healthy. You know, when you look at overall number of rides, and the New York Taxi Limo Commission publishes some really good data on this subject, what you actually see is that although TNC companies, you know, have been growing significantly, they still represent a relatively small percentage of the total number of rides, where most are still cleared through traditional taxi operators. What we're also seeing is that there are a number of new technologies that have been launched that are actually aimed at providing a similar kind of experience for, you know, to connect consumers with traditional operators. And so while we definitely see mobile app dispatch and web-based dispatch and potentially other technologies continuing to be the way that people hail rides, it isn't necessarily funneling rides over the long term away from the traditional operators so much as it's expanding the overall market. So I think in 2014 and 15, you definitely saw migration away from traditional operators in terms of drivers and vehicles, but we're starting to see that, you know, in some cases kind of come back. But most importantly, there really is just an overall expansion. Our perspective is that we want to continue to leverage the data that we have and utilize the predictive analytics that we have to be able to have an underwriting model that allows us to successfully underwrite full commercial auto insurance for people who move people around for money. And so as long as we're talking about people that are commercially licensed, driving commercially plated vehicles, you know, risks that we feel comfortable that we can understand from a loss expectation standpoint, you know, those are all opportunities for us. And then we are going to continue to leverage the data and technology we have to evaluate whether or not we want to expand even into more part-time drivers. But, you know, as we've commented before, as an expert and market leader in this space, you know, it is very likely that in the short term, while we understand those risks and we have the capability to write that business, we're going to be cautious because to some extent we're seeing, especially personal lines writers, underpricing some of those part-time sort of TNC-related risks. And so, you know, we need to see the market mature a bit, I think, before you'll see us, you know, really jumping into that area, which is why, you know, as I commented, we exclude individuals driving their own personal vehicles from the overall addressable market numbers that we give. So the numbers that we're highlighting are solely commercially plated, commercially licensed vehicles being utilized within taxi, limo, livery, and paratransit. So, you know, many of those might rely on some web-based or mobile app-based channel to get some or all of their rides. But we are not, in our market size or market share figures, contemplating, you know, individuals using their own private cars.
I see. That's helpful. But at the same time, I'm assuming that you are pursuing access to have access to data related to those types of drivers that you talked about.
Absolutely.
In order to,
From a research and development standpoint, we absolutely want to make sure that we understand the risks and are able to apply our analytics and leverage the data that we have. But in the insurance business, oftentimes understanding the risk supports a decision to wait rather than to jump into a new market. So our goal is to make sure we always understand it as an industry leader as well or better than anybody. But, you know, I just want to caution people not to necessarily expect to see us jumping in until we feel confident that the risk is going to be, you know, have an appropriate amount of volatility and at the same time, you know, be one that we can achieve the appropriate level of premium in order to deliver the kind of margins that we expect.
Right. Makes sense. Good risk management. Thanks.
Great. Thanks for the question.
The next question is from the line of Fang Li with Bellin Capital. Please go ahead with your question.
Hey, morning, guys.
Morning, Fang.
Morning, Fang.
I had a question on the $2.1 million adverse development. Does that all get booked into Q4 results?
Was it all reflected in the Q4 results? Yes.
Yeah. So meaning that the 2.1 was purely negative for Q4.
Correct. So it, essentially, on an after-tax basis, it had a approximately 10 cents a share impact on income per share in the quarter.
And so without, I mean, so without that one-time adverse development, you're on your core ongoing business, then your loss ratio would have been or was 56%.
For the quarter, correct.
Correct.
Is that a fair starting point to kind of think about using, you know, from here as we think about 2016 and even 17?
You know, because we really think it's better to look at full year numbers as opposed to quarter over quarter because, you know, business mix and, you know, the payment of the occasional larger claim in a quarter can skew the quarter over quarter, I'd suggest using a starting point that is the full year number adjusted for the adverse, which is 58% and change, 58.5. That's probably a better starting point rather than, you know, starting at the 56.
Gotcha. Awesome. That's great. Great stuff. Thanks, guys.
Thanks for the question.
Thanks, Wayne.
Thank you. At this time, I'll turn the floor back to management for closing remarks.
Great. Well, thanks to everyone for joining us. I'd like to close with an invitation to each of you to attend our annual Investor Day on May 16th here at our headquarters outside of Chicago. We received very favorable feedback from investors and analysts on the event we held last year in New York and are hopeful to see many of you here in May. Further information on the event is available at the end of our conference call presentation. So thanks again for joining us, and we look forward to speaking with each of you again in the future.
Thank you. This concludes today's conference call. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect your lines at this time.